outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey. The God Journey.
Well, here we are in the closing days of August, believe it or not. Kids are back in school around here. Kyle is nowhere to be found. He's moved his family to Sheridan, Wyoming. And they've been very busy this week getting all kinds of things put together. So instead of Kyle today, and instead of having just me, my lovely wife, Sarah, has agreed to join us for another podcast. Good afternoon, Sarah.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Doing pretty good.
Yeah, we survived a hurricane.
Yep.
And an earthquake.
Yes.
On the same day.
Yes.
And both were pretty mild where we lived.
Yes.
Chair was a little shooken, and then we got 2 inches of rain, not a lot of wind. I think a pot blew over outside was our storm damage.
Yeah, I had one pole fall down, but it was a shepherd's hook, so it didn't hurt anything.
A neighbor brought us a pineapple plant to welcome us to the neighborhood, and it goes in Hawaii. We have a Hawaii section of the garden, and the home's getting pretty well completed now, isn't it?
It's getting a lot closer.
And yeah. The house part is pretty well done. There's just a few little fix-up kind of things.
Yep.
The outdoor garden stuff still coming together. I know I get email all the time. I want to see pictures of Sarah's garden. I'm like, not yet. We're still working on it. The Hawaii side is done.
Yep, pretty much.
Italy side is getting very close.
It's making good progress.
Yeah, England and France are lagging a little behind, got to say.
Yeah, they're waiting on something to be done before they can actually do it. But then couldn't plant today because the ground is too wet to be able to plant. So
more storm damage.
Yeah, but that's okay.
We needed the rain out here. We always need the rain. It's also going to tamp down any fire damage, help that be mitigated a bit because everything's now wet. And
that should help with some of the fires that kind of can arise.
And we've been fortunate this year. We've not had a major fire in our area. I know Canada is getting slaughtered up there with wildfires. But
and I think Washington has some, and then Maui is just heartbreaking.
It was devastating to see what's happened in Maui. And hopefully you can find a way to help there with people if you've got some extra funds to help them out. Maybe be a good thing. And then you and I, in a couple of weeks, we're going to get in the beast again.
Mm-hmm. Head out.
And we're going to head out to the east from here. Thought about going north a bit, but sorry for those of you in the Pacific Northwest. Not yet. Not this year. We're going to go east, probably through Denver to see our son. So if you're in the area and you want to hang out with us, let us know. That's across Kansas to Illinois, down to Arkansas. We're going to have a bit of a retreat on a weekend out there on a farm or some kind of acreage outside of town near Little Rock. And then we're going to make our way down to Austin, Texas, and San Antonio, and then kind of work home from there. Be gone about 6 weeks, maybe. We'll start a podcast some. Also started He Loves Me book club discussion group starting this Sunday. We'll try and follow that along while we're on our trip. Take time to join us in that conversation for those of you who want to. So there's some stuff, man. If you want to join us in some conversation, either personally while we're traveling through your area, if you're nearby or want to drive a bit to meet us. I know we're getting invites kind of off the trail. And I mean, like 400 to 500 miles off the trail. Not going to make those side trips, I don't think. But we're driving, you know, a few thousand miles. So if you can drive a few hundred and meet us somewhere, that would be awesome. We'd love to talk to some of the God Journey crowd and see what's going on and help people who are still dealing with traumatic kinds of things and whatever.
Yes.
You know, trust me to drive again?
Yes, far more than me.
Are you going to drive?
I'm going to try, seeing how we got a steering stabilizer on there. Maybe that will make it a little bit different.
And for the first time in a long time, everything that we have is in the same place.
Yes, we have no storage units.
We have no storage units. We had a storage thing for the RV. It now parks in our side yard and fits in there. Not by much. We have a few inches on either side coming through the gate, but it works.
Yep, and then the piano was over at Julie's for a while, and so it has made its way back here.
So everything we have is right at our disposal.
Yep, and then we're still trying to get rid of some stuff.
Oh, you want to announce it on the God Journey so people can write and say, hey, send it to me?
This stuff isn't really sendable unless you want to come drive and pick up it up. We got those folding chairs.
Well, yeah, we got some metal old church-type basement folding chairs that Sarah's decided we don't need anymore around here. So
yeah, not too much. Everything is pretty well kind of down, I think.
All's well with Kyle, for those that are wondering where he disappeared to, and we should have him back next week. But he's got four classes, all new. He's teaching. He's never taught before in a college setting. So this is going to be fun for Kyle. We may not see him at all this fall. It's hard to say, but we probably will. So I thought it'd be a good time to bring Sarah in. We started this conversation on sin and trauma with Sarah, and then Kyle and I have played with it a while, and then we did the end of the world thing, which I've got some interesting feedback on that as well. And so now we're coming back to talk about trauma and sin as trauma. And the thing I thought would be fun to focus on today, especially with Sarah here, is just the environment that it takes for healing to happen. What environment made it conducive for you to discover what you need to discover and to find the transitions in your life, which you're finding? And that healing is, as we say it all the time, it's still continuing.
Yes.
For people who say, oh, gosh, Sarah got healed quick. We've had a lot of major movement in her life and discoveries. And Sarah has worked hard, and I don't mean religious works. I just mean she and God and the people around her have worked really hard. She's, what's the word I want to use? Unrelenting. She's unrelenting in ferreting out where the darkness has been in her life and how God wants to bring light there. So we've had some major progress. And yet every few weeks, something else crops up its little head saying, I want to be dealt with too.
Yeah, things that were probably underneath all the other stuff. And as it's kind of like layers, one peels off and then another one comes up. And I don't know if I was even knowing or thinking about what was going to happen after all of everything unraveled. I don't know if I necessarily thought that I was done, or I don't know. I never really thought about it, but definitely am seeing that things and ways I thought and learned to think and survive at a young age. I mean, I'm real young, 3 or 4. In order to survive, things that were I was feeling and happening to me created my process of what I thought life was and what natural, this is just what life is, and everybody deals with stuff like this. Coming to find out that what some of my thought patterns about myself, about how I react, what I think and believe, are not a healthy response. And then those things that have been there and we have responded and lived for almost 70 years have become habits. And it's just like instinct. That's, and I don't see other options. That's just what life is. And finding now that those are sometimes like habits that are not necessarily good habits that are serving me well and others around me well. And so that's where a lot of work has been going to. And it's, that's where like you've talked about where, you know, what's the Bible?
Renewing of the mind.
Yeah. It's creating all new pathways, new ways of thinking, of responding. And that takes a lot of work, takes a lot of time, and can be overwhelming at times.
Yeah, Kyle talks about it like cattle trails, where cattle go down the same way to the pond or whatever. The trail gets worn, ruts get worn. Wagon trains, the same thing, deep ruts. But I'm seeing the unpeeling or the unraveling of your life, both in the negative and the positive, because there's deeper wounds mm-hmm. that you're uncovering that it seemed like, gosh, that was a big wound back there. That was horrible. Mm-hmm. And then there's something else beneath that. So that's happening, deeper layers of darkness. But there's also like peeling a banana or an orange or something. There's fruit underneath. There's the dark unpeeling. That's there. But you asked me two questions recently that I thought were really profound in showing you the progress of where you've gone to. And one was you I think, woke me up in the middle of the night. And
yep.
You were hurting and you were sad. And I asked her, why are you so sad? Why are you feeling sad? Let's locate where the feeling is coming from. Because she's allowed to feel sad. Anybody, sad's fine. And so when I was asking her, I said, why are you so sad? What are you feeling sad about? And it took you a while to answer, as it generally does, was you're trying to dig down and find the right answer. And you said, why does everyone have to be so mean? Remember?
Yep. And then I started listing off certain names through my years, 70 years, of people that have been mean.
And some of them as recent as the last couple of years.
Yeah.
So it's not just like, oh, these are deep childhood wounds, but man, it broke my heart. I know people can be mean, and there are mean people out there. There are emotionally abusive people. And I think most emotional abuse comes out of trauma. They're traumatized in some way. To feel safe in their world, they've got to attack somebody else. And I think that's a wonderful unpeeling of your heart to be able to be honest about grief right when it's there, the sorrow, the why do people have to be so mean, and recognize that there are mean people on the planet and there are good people, not good in an empirical sense, but there are people that are not mean. They're loving, they're kind, they're compassionate, they're reasoned, they're wonderful. And you have both. And that day you were just overwhelmed by the mean people in your life.
I think how do you explain this? So I know certain things happen, and when they happen, that, you know, logically in my mind, I rationalize what happens, why they may have done it, trying to not, to just soften it, maybe for me, or just to help me be able to process it. But then what happens is I didn't allow myself to deal with the deep pain and hurt or even anger that was connected with that action and what they did to me. And I pushed it down. And so now then coming up, and it was the same, not the things that all these people did, but it was things that often some of it is like, I didn't do anything. I was, you know, my actions didn't, their actions towards me, accusations, didn't always match up to anything that I don't have to say deserve, because I wasn't perfect. Suffice to say, I never let myself be able to feel the anger and allow myself to feel the anger and the pain
and the abandonment. All these people that we're talking about are people who profess Christ. They're people we've been in various Christian settings with.
Yep.
And turned out to be unsafe for you, mean for you. You're feeling it at the time, but you're blaming yourself. You're not really blaming other people, right? Because it's like, I'm the one that's got the problem, and I...
Because I would say I deserved it. I did, because if somebody... I wouldn't question myself. I wouldn't just assume and have the assumption that I did something wrong and that what they're saying was wrong. So then I just buried that. So this has been the first time where I've been allowing myself to feel that, and to even, I don't know if that's the first time I've ever really said or looking at people why they have to be mean, because in my mind, it's not hard to be kind to people.
Yeah, in fact, you've got a big sign in our front room, and I don't know where you got it, somewhere, but big sign up above the TV. It says, in a world where you can be anything,
be kind.
And you bought that a long time ago.
Yeah.
That's pretty much something that escapes some people.
Yeah.
And I think you would understand, people in pain don't have the capacity for kindness. If you're just trying to survive, you don't have the capacity for kindness, unfortunately. And so when that acts out, and then you have the freedom. We all do. We have the freedom to say, okay, that person is mean and dangerous and threatening. I don't have to have them in my life. And that's not unloving. It's not unkind. It's just that I don't need that in my life. And then I think the more whole we get over time, the more we can love people like that, just realizing that they're acting out is coming from their own pain. And only love is the thing that will find its way into that pain on their behalf.
Yeah.
But while you're healing, it's really okay, like we talked about before, who you want to invite into this part of your life and who you want to keep outside this part of your life, because they're destructive to your heart and destructive to what God's doing in you.
That's where several months ago, maybe a year ago, where I was realizing where I'm creating my own world, and I get to invite who I want in the world. And most of those people aren't going to be in my world.
Well, at least not now. At least no. Until something changes in their heart, or I don't know what freedom God works in yours.
But what's new is the fact that I'm allowing myself to deal with hurt, pain, and anger and not suppress it.
That's a great example, because I think the whole Christian thing we've been taught is you're not allowed to be angry, you're not allowed to be this, you're not allowed to be that. So you just repress that stuff. You just put it down. You just don't be able to sit in your anger with God, with a friend, and let that anger vent and find expression. And then in it, find how is God's heart, because the anger will keep you captive if you don't find your freedom from it. But there's no hurry to rush on to that freedom. There's no reason to repress it, no reason to pretend. It's, I'm angry, I'm sad, I'm gonna be in those emotions, I'm going to be in that reality with God and watch what he does in me.
I was talking to someone a few months ago, maybe January, February, I don't know. And I was walking and talking to her. You were golfing or doing something. I don't remember what, but
probably praying somewhere.
And I've always been afraid, because I'm thinking of the scripture and the whole religious expectation or whatever, you know, you can't be angry. Angry is bad, is wrong, and not wanting to be an angry person. And I was talking to her and I was trying to express, you know, and come to find out I was angry. And she said, just because you're angry doesn't make you an angry person. Yeah. And that really helped me to separate those two different actions, allowing myself to feel the anger, process the anger, especially with Father as through it, because you got to get through it. And I don't want suppressing, it's not helping. But it doesn't make me the judgment of being an angry person.
And the other thing you said the other day that I thought was very telling about what's going on in your life, you were talking about, what might my purpose be? How do I find purpose? Do I need a purpose in my life? And we haven't answered all that question yet, but that's something that people who aren't trying to survive every day ask. You know, when you were trying just to survive all that was going on inside you, you never had a thought about that, because the thought was just, I've got to get through this day and not do anything too destructive or not.
Well, it was just taking the energy it takes to survive when you're in such pain is huge and it's exhausting. But then also connected with that for me is my purpose was always in life to do what others wanted me to do, not anything on my own. I just do what anybody else needs at any point in time. And if they need something, I drop it in a second and will do that. And because that was just my purpose. And so if that's your purpose, you know that's your purpose. And then there wasn't any other question that came up.
Yeah, so it's a really wonderful sign of the healing that God's bringing to your heart, I think, to be able to go, huh, I wonder if I have a purpose. What does God put Sarah on the planet for? Which you wouldn't ask if you were still just trying to survive every day. That is a major question, I think, to ask in the journey.
Yeah, it's an odd thing, because I just like, why am I thinking about purpose? I mean, it's just... I'm just like, okay, is life boring? No. Is it, I mean, do I have not other things to do? I got things to do. It's unfamiliar. It's uncomfortable.
Yep. But it shows progress, I think. It shows amazing progress. And it wasn't the whole need for significance. How do I be significant? It wasn't that. It was just, is there a purpose? Am I here for, which is now I'm looking beyond just, I've got to make everybody around me happy, to, is there a reason that God put Sarah on the planet? And how does that unfold in your heart? And I think that's a great sign.
Yeah, you've been helpful to be able to see those things as new steps or new levels. I'm not sure what to say in this process. Or
new layers. There's layers going deeper into darkness, but as those other layers get peeled off, there's more layers of light too. There's more thinking inside better space. And for those that say, well, gosh, did you find out our purpose? I've been looking for my purpose. I don't think we find a purpose and then go, and that's what I was taught growing up. What's your purpose? What's your vision? What's God called you to do? And then go do it. I think we just live with God every day. Our purpose becomes clear. How we interact with people. What happens in people when I'm around them? Our purpose becomes clear. I tell young people all the time who are trying to find a purpose in life, just live with God. Watch what love does in you. And then you'll look back going, oh, that's why God put me on the planet. So for those of you just saying, oh yeah, answer that question because I want to find my purpose. Don't even try. Just find the joy of saying, Jesus, why have you put me on the planet today? Who have you given me to love today? And the other thing all leads toward plans and ministries and programs and all that kind of stuff. I'm trying to fulfill my ministry instead of, no. Just love God and love with him in the world. And pretty soon you'll find out how Sarah loves well, how Wayne loves well, and how God takes expression through our lives in that way, which is cool. Back to some fleshy thing. I read this week. I was one of your favorite authors ever, C.S. Lewis, which Sarah does. I'm a C.S. Lewis nut. I was in the old days. I haven't read a lot of C.S. Lewis, but I'm picking some up lately. And he was talking about the sins of the flesh are bad, but they are the least bad of all sins. He's talking about sex and lust and those kinds of things. They're the least bad of all sins. All the worst pleasures are purely spiritual. The pleasure of putting other people in the wrong, of bossing, of patronizing, and spoiling sport, and backbiting, the pleasures of power and of hatred. That is why a cold, self-righteous prig who goes regularly to church may be far nearer to hell than a prostitute. But of course, it is better to be neither. I love how he flips the whole hierarchy of sins in our mind, you know, between it's not people who are doing things with their flesh that's harmful and hurtful to them. It's people who destroy relationships, who use their whatever for pleasures of power and hatred, trying to manipulate other people into making them happy or whatever. I love the flip on that. The sin is not what we think it is. The worst of all sins, at least in C.S. Lewis's mind. So we've been having this discussion about, does God view our sin like I've come to view a trauma? And we've had some amazing interactions with people. We may get time to read some of those in a bit. And if not, Kyle will pick them up at some point. Because I love the fact that people are processing this with us, really thinking through it. I'm going to read this one from Dwight. It says, so does God look at my sin in a judicial way? I don't think he does. I do think he looks at my acts that are not born out of love as continued brokenness. But if I had a brain injury and could not act properly, no one would hold me personally accountable for my choices. Maybe God sees our brokenness as something to be healed and not something to be judged. And I understand how he's using the word judged, because in a religious sense, we always use judged as a kind of a bad thing, like God's had enough and now he's going to punish. I think of judged as God setting things right. So I think when God is loving us in our brokenness as something to be healed, I think judgment is a good word for healing. I know people don't see it that way because we think, judgment is God finally got ticked and now he's laying things low. No, I think judgment in scripture is God's coming to set things to right. And that setting things right in my heart, and it's setting things right in relationships where lies have won the day, where this manipulative stuff that Lewis talks about and others has ruined and destroyed relationships. God's going to come and set right. He's going to expose what's of darkness, and he's going to reveal the light. And that's healing to everyone involved. It's not, I need to blast that person and, you know, home team, away team stuff. I don't think God thinks that way like we do. I think God is, for all of us, where we're broken, he wants to heal, not judge and not make us hurt more. And then I got an email from Brent The subject matter of this one I loved in the context of our current discussion. He said, the subject was this, sin. I'm loving it. Well, that's a humorous take on the whole thing. He said, your recent podcast on our concept of contempt for sin is breaking all kinds of chains. I used to get so mad at our kids when they acted out, made a scene, blatantly broke a rule. We would shame them and punish them in anger sometimes, hoping that the serious consequences of their action would prevent them from doing it again. We were so wrong for so many reasons, and what we came to identify is that our anger was not at the sin or its consequences for our kids. We were angry because they had embarrassed us or hurt ours or someone's feelings or had in some way inconvenienced us. How dare you throw a fit while I'm on a phone call? The quote that caught me from the podcast, we get so impatient with other people's healing process when we feel we are the victims of it. I always find people sin worse when I'm in the when I am the victim of it. Wow, that is exactly the trap I still get stuck in, even as recently as in dealing with trauma and drama in my adult kids all around us. I love the insight of that. That's why it's easier when we're dealing with difficult situations to pick a side, like couples going through a divorce. Somebody's got to be the victim. Someone's got to be the victimizer. And then we can kind of lean into that kind of loving space, but then we miss the real thing.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you this, Sarah, because you've been through some amazing healing and still going through it. But we've talked about the performance idea of handling sin. I think the Old Testament is you're doing these things. They offend God. And out of your fear of God, you should be acting better, learning the rules, the law, the codes. We make that New Testament principles. And we kind of, this process kind of looks like this. You confront sin, you confess sin, you educate people as to the right thing, you call them to obedience. They fail. So then they have more guilt. Then they reconfess. And then it just goes on and on. So it's a whole performance dynamic. And I just want to ask you, how well would that have served your trauma?
None at all.
What would it have felt like if people would have said, okay, this is what you did. This is what's wrong. You left your husband. You made promises and vows. You did this, you did that. How would that have promoted healing in your heart?
That would beat me into the ground to where there would be no wanting to get up.
I'm thinking of people in this audience. I think of things I've been through in my life. That'd be true for all of us. The whole idea of you've done wrong, so you pray, because God's mad, so now you pray and you get under the blood of Jesus so God can tolerate you now. But day two of salvation is, now this is the way God wants you to live. And if you live this way, it makes you happy. And if you don't live this way, it makes him offended. And so I go off and try and do my best. That always fails because we're powerless in sin. And so this would, like you said, it would drive you into the ground, wouldn't it?
It's like a sledgehammer that would be just driving you harder and harder in the ground to where there's eventually no coming out.
And wouldn't it be as true of sin as it is of trauma? I think the big difference is we don't blame people for their trauma. We know something happened to you.
Yeah.
So it's easy not to blame, not to try to make performance overcome the things that have got twisted in your life, that this great untangling has to happen. And that process has been, if I describe it this way, I don't know if maybe you would add to it, but the motive for the performance thing always is either a fear of hell or of displeasing God. So I'm trying hard to stay in God's good graces, but I'm always going to fail. So I always need to reconfess, go to a mountaintop experience somewhere, pledge my life to not do it again, and then go back and fail again, and guilt multiplies. The second one is motivated out of something else. It's to be embraced by love. And this is what God's doing with us. One, to find you in your pain and to find a way to love you in a space where you're free to be loved. And when we were first getting back together, there wasn't much space for that, right?
Free to...
Wasn't much space for me to love you.
No.
You were very guarded.
Yep.
Very, very much like, I can't go down this road again. This almost killed me the first time. I'm not going back. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But love found a way to you over weeks.
Yeah.
Wasn't quick.
No.
But it allowed you. So to be embraced by love, which I think is what God wants to do with all of us in our sin. If we could define sin, not as here's the rules you violated about God, but almost like Dwight did a few moments ago, sin is where I live unloved. It's where I'm living as if I'm unloved. And so I'm doing things to, I think, are best for me, or I'm doing things to survive. I think that makes Dave Coleman always defined it as grabbing for ourselves that which God has not given us. And I really think it's just love. Sin is whenever I act apart from the love God has for me. And you could get everything in that. But to be embraced by love, to be invited into a safe and soothing environment with our Father.
That's what was important for me is, because I think of a stressful, if you're reacting or being triggered by something, you're already in an anxious or anxiety mode. And any kind of extra difficulty, stress, harsh words, strong words, actions that seem to provoke some kind of anger stimulus or whatever to you, only takes you to a deeper space of anxiety. And for me, the way of to feel where that anxiety, that mode, that when I was being triggered with my PTSD and all the things that would be responding, it was a calmness. It was a quietness. It was a gentleness. It had to be a place of safety. I think I described you the other day, you were explaining what Dr. Horner had told you about meekness. Meekness is where it was, that's the only way where I find rest and peace and can come out of that state of anxiety and depression and anger and pain.
And I think that's where all your discoveries have come. Your discoveries have not come because people are confronting you with the truth. You know, it's that Jesus laid an environment for you. We talked about me trying to live at your speed instead of Wayne's speed. Even things where I got intense about, and not even intention like angry or frustrated, just I get intense.
Yep.
You would go, please, just be quieter. Just can you say that a little softer?
Yeah.
And I just think, man, that is really, if the new covenant did anything, if Christ's death on the cross did anything, the Hebrews 10 language of it grants us access to the Father, where we can be confident with him. Not when we're perfect, not when we've got all our ducks in a row. At my most broken, I can be with my Abba Father in the tenderness of that moment and know that I'm safe there. Yeah, I could be doing a whole bunch of things wrong. I have a whole bunch of lies in my head that I think are true. I can have all of that, but it's the soothing, safe relationship with God. And I think a lot of the Bible, a lot of the Old Testament, safe and God didn't seem to go in the same sentence. It's scary. It was, can't even bear to look at God, you know, all those, now that language. But Jesus comes and invites his disciples to a different kind of relationship with him. Now, he was God, remember? So it's not just with him now, but also with his Father. And there's a safe environment there where you can, the third thing in that, so there's being embraced by love, invited to a safe and soothing environment with our Father, so that we can know what's true. We can discover what's true in an environment of growing trust.
And it's hard to know what's true. It's hard enough to know what's true when you're in a rational state mind, but to know what's true, you have to be at peace internally to where you can, your mind is not swarming around. That's the only thing I know how to describe it. It's it can think, because when I'm in an anxiety mode or depressed mode or all that, my thinking is not rational.
Right, and someone can come and tell you exactly what's true, mm-hmm. and try to ram it down your throat, but it's not anything that's going to be life-changing to you.
Not until I think and I believe it. And I accept it to be true.
There has to be a discovery.
Yep.
And that discovery comes inside this safe and soothed. I look at these things now. I wrote this down basically describing how we found our way back to each other, how I got back with you. And I look at a lot of that as being the way Jesus has initiated his life with me. I was just living that out with you in a very different way because I could see there was something horribly wrong. And I loved you enough that I wanted to find a way to that. So a loving, soothing environment in which truth could be discovered. And I didn't always bring the truth. I provided the safe, soothed relationship. Other people, including God, at times showed you stuff that was different than you had come to know and believe, very different. And that when you discovered it that way, that truth found a home in you and still is.
Yeah, it's like early on when all things were coming out and I was struggling even with believing that they even actually happened and how all that could have unraveled. But then I realized, and I mean, for probably weeks, I don't know how long it lasted, you would ask me questions and I don't know. That's all I said. I don't know. I don't know. And it was sorting through, and I'm still at times sorting through everything I believe, all the different things that I thought and was told for the last decade probably, and having to figure out, what is that? Is that true or is that not true? And for me, with God, deciding and seeing what was true in my heart and thought. And I mean, I still struggle with some of that.
And even when I knew what true was, my saying it to you
didn't help.
Wouldn't make it happen.
No.
So I was much more able with you than I think ever I've been with anyone else before at a time like that to just go, okay, I know it's true here, but I know God needs to show her.
Yeah.
My job, my task is to keep you safe and soothed and loved and cared for. And then watch what God begins to push the boundaries of truth for you so that you could see stuff. Even some things we talk about today, like I'll say, well, I think this is true about you. And you're going, I wish I, or you can even say, I agree with that, but I don't see it yet. So well, intellectually, you're there, but not emotionally.
I mean, you could tell me that I'm not a horrible person. I could do all the self-talk to think that I'm not a horrible person and say that to myself over and over again. Thousands and thousands of time, but until I actually worked through and then worked through the process and believed it for myself, when I actually then believe what I am saying, I don't know if you can talk yourself to believe it enough. There's a difference between saying it and then knowing it and believing it. And it's kind of like the light bulb kind of comes on type of thing. I mean, somebody has said it for a long time, but you have to really believe it for yourself. A person who's been helping me recently, I think it was after the time where we were talking about how why people were so mean, and we were talking through some of my anger and the pain and the hurt that I was feeling, and then after a while, we got started talking about the garden. I don't know where it came up, and talked about the envision of what I'm doing and about the birds and the plants and what I'm going to put in there and what I want to do and how, and then what I envision and sitting in there. And as I was going now preoccupied more with that, then we went back and was talking about, then she says, how do you feel about some of the things where we were, you know, while when we started? And it was less. For me, gardens, birds, dogs, sitting in that is calming, relaxing, and gets me in touch with Father, which gets me to a place of where I can be at peace and my heart can get more at rest. And that takes away then, or diminishes, I don't know quite how what it does. The other stuff, the pain and the hurts, is not as big and preoccupied.
It's that safe and soothing environment, right? For you, find it in gardens. I find it in walks in the woods or walking along Old Boney and looking for white rainbows and seeing the clouds play with the mountains. And there's places where our hearts are more at rest. I got this email from someone. I thought, man, this was incredible. She said, when Jesus holds forgiveness for the people killing him without them even asking for it, that should wreck our entire religious ways. I love that. The Father, forgive them. They know not what they do to these Pharisees who were murdering him. And yet it's been there in the Bible the whole time. I just didn't have eyes to see. And to instead, a culture of Christians around me constantly telling people how to earn their salvation. Getting away from that noise has allowed my heart to wander into some truths that have always been there. And she said, and when I saw that, it's like something crumbled inside and new life could take its place. I honestly felt freaked after that because everything I believed my whole life is now shattered, but shattered for the good. And she said, I took my kids to the beach for a few days to process out, which is nice to do when you're kind of in that space. I love that because I look at the first environment. You put your trauma into the environment of confrontation and repentance and education and obedience and failure, and it just doesn't work.
It makes it worse.
And the question is, wouldn't that also be true of sin? We've got people who've done down that road with sin, and after years, even people who teach that are not freer. They got all these dark places in their heart that are in documentaries on every streaming service these days. And they're not necessarily bad people. They just ended up in darkness. And she said getting out of the environment of performance Christianity was really key to her discovering something true that absolutely shattered her world in a really good and wonderful way. And the second process we talked about, what would that, we know what it does for trauma. I've watched it happen in you. Man, it just allows to be loved even in your brokenness, to be safe and soothed with someone and ultimately with Father so that he can reveal what truth he wants to reveal to us. Being able to embrace that with a growing trust that I'm loved, that I don't have to perform here. I can fail and I'm still loved and he's going to keep inviting me into truth as he reveals stuff to me. And that ends up being growing in freedom. The freedom grows in my heart, and with it, joy and gratitude. I see all that happening in you, that process right there. Easy to see it for trauma. I think what the joy of the last month and a half for me has been to see it in sin as well. To hear somebody's sin story with the goal of soothing them and helping them be embraced by love, because it's the lack of love that gives sin its power.
Yeah.
And so it's not trying to take sin away so you can earn a relationship with God. It's actually offering the love, just Jesus to the tax collectors, Jesus to the prostitutes, Jesus to the cheating, mean people. The only ones he got rough with were the religious crowd that were describing what C.S. Lewis talked about, all their backbiting, treacherous, lying, deceitful, accusing ways. All the people who are trying to put people down the performance machine, instead of inviting them into the kind of relationship that brings healing and wholeness over time. And that's why I think with sin and standards, you don't have any time. This is sin. You're doing it. Stop it. Instead of, no, there's something twisted inside you. The great untangling. How does Jesus untangle us from the places we got broken or got stuck? And as I said, what I find easy to do in this now is when I meet somebody in their sin story, I can treat them exactly like I did you. I don't blame you. It's not the old Wayne and the old things I was raised in. Well, if you got a problem, what did you do to earn this? Well, you've done that and you've cheated here and you've been sinful and you've lost. So now you deserve what you've got. Instead of, now we all got twisted by the sin. And God's the one that's coming now to reattach us. Jesus reattaches us to the Father, so that in that safe and soothing environment, he can win me to truth and win me to trust, and then life changes. And I think that's why it's hard for people who say, God doesn't speak to me or God's not involved in my life that way. When you're on that religious performance treadmill, like she said, when I got out of that environment, I began to see stuff. And as long as we're in that environment, it's going to be really tough to see. There's a better environment for us that brings healing to our hearts. Thank you, Sarah, for joining us today.
You're welcome.
You're always good to come in and pitch in when, and now it's not even a fight. I just say, you want to? And you say, yes. And then next week, roll that Kyle back in.
Yep.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.